Welcome to How Rugby Made Me, brought to you by our brilliant friends, good partner, British Airways. I'm Mike Tindall, I'm back up in God's country, my hometown of Leeds, to meet a very, very good friend of mine. He's a legend of both sides of the game, league and union. He's known for his electric feet, his incredible acceleration, and there's pretty much nothing he hasn't won in either codes. 20 years on since scoring that try in 2003, he's invited me to his first ever club to have a little meander down memory lane. So welcome everyone to the Hunslet Club. Let's go inside and meet the one and only Jason Robertson. Now, we are in the summer holidays, so there is a kids club on. So we've had to go into a very different room than you would expect, but let's see how it goes. Well, we're back, the Hunslet Club.
Yeah.
It's been amazing to get here from driving into the car park. Obviously, I imagine it's changed from the first time you were here, but you know, the pitches on the other side, walking in here, it's got that sort of youth club vibe. Obviously, we are in the boxing ring. There's table tennis tables, there's pool tables, there's obviously the boxing ring, there's football trophies, there's rugby trophies.
It's everything.
Is that what it was when you first got here, the place where it gave you the first taste into everything sporting? And
This place hasn't changed. It's the same building. You know, we're here now in the boxing ring, and obviously I'm...
Go on, did you step in here?
We had no choice. You know what? Why do you think I'm fast? Because I couldn't box. Dear me. Like, as you're walking here, you can't...
It's a bit smaller pitch, isn't it? So that's where you got your fast feet from. Yeah,
it's not the same pitch when you're jumping out of the ring just to get away from people. But what you can't see now is, as you walk in, there used to be flats just at the side here, and it was a big project, big housing estate, and dear me, it got condemned, I think, after 12 years. So it was one of the worst projects ever. And it's, you know, there's some of the toughest people in this area used to live there. But because this was on our doorstep, I think I came here when I was about 5 or 6. We used to just walk here because we had somewhere to go.
Yeah.
You know, this was, and still is, a tough area.
Yeah.
And one of the great things about the club was it just welcomed everybody in. We didn't have any money. You know, my story anyway. My father there guiding me. My mum's a cleaner. But all the kids used to be drawn down to here because we could come and play pool. You know, we could run around the hall. We could start rugby. We could do a bit of boxing. And Dennis, who's run this play, I think, since 1971.
It's 50-year, man.
You couldn't find a nicer person.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get invited in because he thought I was going to be a good rugby player. Yeah. You know, there's so many people that have come through and done some amazing things, but everybody is welcome. And they find something for you to do. And I started out, as I say, he used to bring us in here because there was a lot of kids with a lot of anger, a lot of stuff going on. And instead of everybody just getting stuck into each other on the car park, it's like, well, you want to fight then?
Yeah.
Come on then, get in the ring. Let's see how tough you are. And that is a completely different thing when you get in a ring.
Sounds like Dennis sort of understood the area. I mean, is he a local guy? It sounds like he understood the area, understood the kids, and probably helped your mum out as well, having a place that she was comfortable you going to and she could get on with.
But where do you go?
Yeah.
Where do you go? If you haven't got anywhere to go, the kids will just traumatise people, get up to mischief, break windows, just...
Hang around together and get bored.
Yeah, and you know what that brings. But this was great. I mean, the place from the outside hasn't changed one bit.
Has it managed to keep the same fields? Are they the same size or have they shrunk?
We didn't have those fields. The pitch I used to play on is just over near the railway station, so we had to walk over the road to the pitch.
Right.
So growing up, I started at the Hunslet Club and then played for a few years here. Went to Hunslet Park Side, which is a few miles up the road. And then what's happened over the years is because of the challenges, you know, everybody's face and money, they've all merged. So now there's three clubs as one, which is fantastic. Yeah. So all the pitches are accessible, there's more facilities, and they're looking after more and more kids. And as a result of that, everything's sort of thriving, the numbers, because there's so many clubs that are struggling for numbers. And what Dennis has done so well with the Hunslet Club is, instead of just sit back and always just looking for funding, they've done it themselves. And there's an educational program here. You know, where kids have been kicked out of school, where do you go? So they've done an educational program here. They teach them joinery, woodwork, and then they've invested in some houses that have been, you know, that needed doing up, and they've got the kids to go and work on the houses to get them up to a standard then.
It's a skill set,
and it might be a single mother that needs a house, and now she... They do some amazing things, and they do events in the hall. They've turned the hall. I mean, one day it's a hall for kids to run around.
Yeah, like today.
The next day it's full of punch bags, and they'll do circuit sessions for all kinds of people, kids, adults. And then, you know, the weekends or in the evening, you know, they bring all the lights out and the drapes and everything else, and it's a venue to raise some money. So they've been very proactive in that, and I love coming back because it just reminds me where it all started, who I really am. You know, take away all the glitz and the glamour and the World Cups and everything else, this is me. This is Robbo, J-Ro.
Did it take long to realise that rugby league was the sport for you, or was it? Well, you'd obviously run out of here, out of the boxing ring.
Oh, you don't realise how many people love to fight around this area. Just love to fight. For me, that was the last option. And there's some boxers here, you know, that have gone on to, you know, to do really well. But yeah, I realised early doors, boxing wasn't for me. So it was a case of, right, we'll just try rugby and... you know, the rest is history.
It was an instant success. Won a few awards here. I think you've actually got a picture of.
Yeah, I brought
Gary
a couple of pictures
Schofield.
To show you because over the years there's a few players because my background was rugby league and there's a few people that inspired me to play. So and were part of in and around Hunslet Club, Hunslet Parkside, and I've got this picture here with. Me collecting an award and the great Gary Schofield, Leeds legend, Great Britain.
I used to obviously watch Leeds a fair bit, and he was Skips, and then he was at Great Britain.
He was a legend of the game, and for me and for all the other younger players to see him and to see that he has gone on to do something amazing. We just wanted to be like him. So for me to be able to get I think it was a player of the year that I'm getting there. And to be presented that by him was just amazing. It was just amazing.
Threads are looking tight too.
And mess about there. That's some nice slacks on.
The old grey
nice
slacks. Yellow grey jumper. It's tight.
I've got another picture here, and this is me playing at Headingley. I think it was a seven-a-side tournament, but
that's for Hunslet Park, right?
So this was a sevens tournament, and for any child to play in a major stadium. Was massive because I was a ball boy at times as well. But I always wanted to play for Leeds. It's my hometown club. Everybody in this place wanted to play for the Leeds Rhinos. And I look at this and I just think, it's amazing. That was my dream. And sometimes it's good to not always get what you want because...
Makes you hungry.
Well, I mean, it sort of worked out. They didn't want me and they chose somebody else. So I then... sort of switched direction and went to Wigan.
So then the journey you played, all your rugby league up here, did it then go through a trials process to go to the Rhinos or how was the process of the development at that point through rugby league?
They always just seemed to be barriers. I don't know if it was my childhood, there always was something like trying to pull me back, whether it's home life, whether it was going for trials. The highest I ever got to, amateur level was county. I played for Yorkshire a few times, but then when I went to play for England, didn't get in.
Yeah,
I didn't have the connections. There's lots of players I was playing against. Their dads were the scouts. Their dad were this, and it just seemed that it just wasn't meant to be. And then I went for some trials at Leeds and did all right, but they decided to choose somebody else over me. And I look back, and at the time I was a bit, you know. Probably a bit annoyed, but I look back now and think it was probably the best thing that could have ever happened because Leeds Rhinos at that time, great club, but never achieved anything.
Yeah.
That then paved the way for me. There was a scout in Leeds, a Wigan scout in Leeds called Eric Hawley, and he was the one that got me to Wigan. So I signed at Wigan as a 16-year-old. And then I went over and lived there full-time at the age of 17 and then went on this journey with, you know, the sort of famous Wigan team in the 90s and dominated everything.
You obviously said there about people, parents being scouts and this and that. Was, you know, with your family, was there much sporting history or...?
Absolute zilch.
Was that?
Zilch. No, but I can remember my brothers... Got two older brothers. I can remember them playing one football match ever, and I was going to watch them. I mean, he ended up scoring a goal, like, but I'd literally literally the line was there, the goal line, and he must have just kicked it about 3 centimeters, like, and it was a muddy day. It was awful. It was raining. My other brother didn't want to get out of the car. He was sat in the back of the car. It was raining. He didn't want to come out, so he was just sat in there smoking. And that is the only time I've ever seen my siblings play sport. So nothing, no uncles, no family members ever did anything.
So what was the attraction for you? Was it, did it hit you on so many levels, or did you just realise, I'm actually really fast, I'm actually quite good, or was it something you actively wanted to do, or, you know, you came here, it fell on your lap, you found stuff you were good at, and you went, actually, I'm enjoying it whilst being good at it.
I didn't really have a plan for it. It just kind of happened. And at the time, I think I was going through a lot of stuff and saw a lot of stuff as a child, and had lots of anger and I don't know, lots of feelings that I needed to deal with. And rugby was just a great way to get rid of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was one of those, I was pretty... shy growing up and pretty quiet, but I had a lot of stuff going on, and I just found with rugby, it just gave me an outlet. It was brilliant. You could hit people and it was legal, and there was a discipline side to it, and there was a sense of belonging, and, you know, I built a bit of resilience up over time. But all of a sudden, instead of sort of always been told, you're too small, you're not this, I started to get a few pats on the back, and it was like, oh, well done. Honestly, I can't tell you how much of a difference that makes, because some people take it for granted that you know, you go out in the morning to school, you come back, you know, you sat down, how was your day, bloody, bloody, blah, you got a meal made for you, this and that, and you, do you know what I mean? Most of the kids around here and where I grew up, that wasn't the case. It's a lot of the time it's kind of fending for yourself. And we had to do a lot of stuff ourselves. So you didn't always get, you know, the praise to kind of lift you or inspire you. So just getting that as a rugby player at a young age was brilliant, because I wasn't academic. I wasn't one that really enjoyed school. But all of a sudden I started to be good at a sport, and I was getting a little bit of attention.
Which brought positive feedback, which feels good about yourself, that makes you want to play more sport, more of it.
Exactly. And I played, you know, I didn't just play rugby. I played every sport. I used to love tennis. I was a high school champ at tennis. I was a Crown Green bowling champion for 2 years.
Stop it.
People don't realise I was Crown Green bowling champ, 2 years on the trot. And fair play to the old guys at the Crown Green Bowling Blade, because it's like, well, how do we get, like, young kids around here playing Crown Green Bowling? Because normally you'd see them with the flat caps on it.
It's actually a lot of fun.
I know. Somebody must have had a great idea. I know. Let's put some money on it. So all of a sudden, me and my mates knew we could go and win. I think it was £2 prize money. But when back in the day, sweets were only half a pence.
I think a smart company once said it always matters more when there's a bit of cash.
Oh, I'm telling you, so I won it for 2 years on the trot. So, but it was...
I'm intrigued by this now. How much training did you put into this?
Oh, we loved it. We loved it. We used to go up to the park, because the park was everything. Like, any opportunity, you come home, you put your bag in, you go to the park. Everybody would meet at the park. Everything happened. Cross Flats Park, it's not far from here. But everything would happen at the park. And depending on time of the year, if, you know, there's a lot of Asian kids around, Pakistani kids, and they love cricket. So depending on what time of the year, if the cricket was on, we'd go up to the park and it was cricket. And we'd have to play and try and beat them at cricket. Or if you were lucky, one of my mates had a golf club. He had a 7-iron. So we would make the park the golf course. So we would dig holes.
Seeing health and safety issues here, but
listen, there was a few stray balls.
It was way before those days.
So at a 7-iron, and we used to like dig holes certain places, and we used to do our own thing. And so there was balls flying everywhere, obviously through windows. And but then Wimbledon was on. You know, we'd try and find a tennis racket, and we go out and we just play tennis all summer. So it was sport just became something that I didn't watch much sport. But I used to just love playing it.
So then, do you think that I know you always wanted to be a Rhino, but by having to move and get away, do you feel if you'd have played for the Rhinos, would this and the life that you lead been a bit too close on the doorstep? Do you think actually going to Wigan made you change the way you think you had to go fit in a very different place, Lancashire?
Very, very different. Yeah, they're not like us.
They're a bit weird. Over
yeah,
there.
It's the other side, isn't it? Yeah. People don't realise the rivalry between Yorkshire, Lancashire, you know, and especially got like Wigan as well. You know, it's a rugby town, and the great thing for me was probably the change that I needed. You know, no disrespect, there's some great people around here, but there was also a lot of things that could have held me back.
So well, you just talked about it, and you felt like something was always pulling you back when you cut the cord.
Yeah, but it was, dearie me, was it a change? You know, I signed for Wigan at 16. I'm full-time at 17. I've got my own house in Wigan, mortgage. And I mean, I've never been brought up in a house that has ever been owned by a family member. Yeah. At 17, I'm over playing for Wigan. And I own my own house. You know, I was full-time, and all I was doing is playing rugby. And I always remember just going to Wigan and seeing all the bloody stars there, you know, the Sean Edwards, the Andy Farrells and Dean Bells, Martin Afires of the world. And I was just like, wow. Do you know what I mean? You go from playing at one level to all of a sudden being at the biggest club in the world. And then within a year, I go from playing in the academy, handful of games in the reserves, to then the next year I was in. From the off, somebody got injured and I was in, and I went on a journey, to 10-year journey with Wigan, and we bloody did some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Enjoyed yourself on the way. Because I was talking to Shira, our producer, about this, about you enjoy yourself. You pop back over every now and then, because I always talked about Tempe a pint night, rooftop gardens.
10 pence a pint night. That nearly was the death of me, 10 pence a pint night.
Well, because that was fight night. Because if you lose your cup that cost you £5, your plastic cup, then you have to go steal someone else's, and no one's giving that up free.
Not a chance. I mean, I joke about it now, but...
Rooftops, into Casanovas.
It was horrific. 10 pence a pint night. I
don't even know what we were drinking.
It definitely wasn't
lager.
No, I think it was straight out the toilet. I think they were just feeding it back in.
The whole week at the end of the night, when they emptied the dregs tray, they'd pour it back in the kegs.
Don't.
And that was what you were having. But.
Yeah, and I mean, it was back in the day, that was a culture. It was more, you know, let's enjoy it, let's go out. And I suppose because I was living on my own, I, you know, Wakefield was only one of the stops in the week. It might have been Tuesday, Liverpool, Wednesday, Oldham, Thursday, Wigan. I just went on a tour all week until match day. And then maybe it's because of youth, and managed to do it for a few years. But certainly took its toll.
It was a bit looser in those early days, wasn't it? Especially your earlier days.
There's no cameras. There's no cameras.
Professional, no cameras.
There was no, you know, the boys... On a bloody Thursday night, Wednesday night, 6:30, 7 p.m. stood on tables dancing, wasn't the norm. But nobody had a camera, so you were sort of all right.
Yeah, obviously you played with the great Twiggamala. Who would you say, with everything he brought, a different side that he brought to you? And I would say he's quite a calming influence, wasn't he? The great man. But in terms of settling you down a little bit, did you get more professional off the back of? You know, having the likes of him around you and how he spoke and what he talked about, and because making the switch from rugby league to rugby union, the due diligence you did around the game, which I always say is one of the greatest things about you, your physical specimen is one, and what you can do with your feet is was a natural given that you worked hard on. But then the kicking game, understanding rucking and understanding how the game works, takes a completely different side of actually looking, watching. By having that sort of control that you learned, because you made an active life choice to change, didn't you?
And that was, you know, if you look at the bigger picture and think, well, I'm a council kid. I come from very little. So my first job coming out of school as a 15-year-old, I'm cleaning metal. That was, you know, the path my take sport out of the way. That's where I was going. So all of a sudden, within a year, you're signing for Wigan, the biggest club in the world. You're full-time at 17. 18, you're playing at Wembley, you're playing for Great Britain, all these different things. People don't realise just how much of a change that is. Like, how does your character change? Your character can't change that quick. But I didn't have anybody to teach me about pressures, about handling money, about handling fame. All of a sudden, you go from walking around the streets here where nobody's really bothered, yeah, to all of a sudden, you're walking out of Wembley.
Yeah.
You know, that's huge. And walking out of Wembley as a young boy. So I go through that and everything just happens so quickly. I'm in the papers, I'm playing at Wembley, I'm playing for Great Britain, got money in my pocket. Well, how do you deal with that? How do you, all of a sudden, you know, as the money rolls in, you become better looking.
Yeah.
You know, and you get a lot more attention. it's amazing. Do you know what I mean? Round the streets, I didn't get looking here all of a sudden. Yeah, I started to earn a bit of money in Wigan and bloody hell, it certainly looked a lot better. But there was loads of challenges. Who's around you? Why are they around you? Do they want to just be with you for profile and, you know, to suck the life out of you? And I just didn't. I was blowing around like a bloody leaf.
Yeah.
The environment that we're in, I mean, it's tough. I'm a young lad. I'm never going to go in and tell a Kelvin Skerritt or Phil Clark or any of those guys, Dean Bell, right, this is how we should do it. Sit there and just shut up. And if they say, right, we're going out on a Thursday drinking, like, it doesn't matter what happened at home, you're going out drinking.
Yeah.
And if that becomes a Monday that goes all the way through to a Wednesday or Thursday, well, you know, strap yourself in because that's what's happening.
That's what my peers are doing. When we first got into England, it was very much similar. We fell into Jason and Lol's wing.
Oh, but that's the worst thing because I, as a back, ended up, my best mates in the team were all forwards.
Yeah.
They've been drinking for years and they had the frame to do it. I'm a little skinny rat and I'm trying to keep up drink for drink with them. It's hard. So you go through that
period. But the culture was good that week, wasn't it? Because you all looked after each other. I've had this conversation with you before in the fact that, yes, it was that side where you go out and enjoy yourself because whether you like it or not, one of the parts, especially around rugby, is that social element and having pints and that's where your friendships are fully cemented. But you always said that it was you had a good bond with it. They always had a good bond.
But it was performance first.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you can go out every night. If you didn't back it up, if you didn't do what you need to do on the pitch, then you know the drinking didn't really matter. But the great thing about Wigan was it wasn't just about winning. Do you know what I mean? It was because we had so many great players, so many world class players, like it was a consistent performance.
Yeah.
You go off the mark for a couple of games, the likelihood is you probably never get back in. Because there was so much competition for places. But that just drove everybody. I mean, just growing up with I see a few of the guys now, obviously, with the likes of Sean Edwards and Andy Farrell. And I see what they're doing now. And I see, whilst it's great what they're doing, I see where it all started.
Yeah.
And it was that Wigan way. It was that mentality. It was the attention to detail. It was working hard. It was, you know, it was consistency in performance. It was just trying to better yourself. Every time we went in the gym, who's the strongest, who's the fastest, who's the smartest? Wigan in itself was a great place, but there was a lot of expectation.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about, oh, well, like, can we win Wembley once? No, we won it 8 years on the trot.
Yeah.
And then when you look at rugby and rugby league, and it's tribal, it's bloody nasty. Like, when you play for Wigan, everybody hated you. Everybody outside Wigan hated you. And I mean hated you. Like, for me as well, as a young black guy, me and Martin are fighting. Oh, we used to get absolutely...
And you're closest to the fans.
Oh, man, on the wing. That's why I learned... Back in the day, the wingers used to, especially probably more so in rugby union, you're told to stay on your wing. There is not a chance I am standing there, because if they could reach you, they'd pull you into the crowd and give you a good hiding. The abuse made me go and looking for work in the middle. So I was always sniffing around the middle as well to just, because it was brutal. But then it kind of toughened you up. It gave you resilience to, no matter what, who doesn't like me, what I come across, I'm going to get the job done. And we're going to shut the crowd up. And as a result, we did. And we made the success become our fuel. And we want to win it twice. We want to be the first team that's won it twice, three times, four times, five times. And if we don't do it, then like we'd be really, really hard on ourselves.
If we go through your league career, you just talked about winning it eight times at Wembley. Obviously, you went to World Cups, lost the semi-final of the World Cup to Australia.
In the final.
I meant the final. Did it get to the point, you obviously signed a contract in Australia that you didn't sort of go over to in the end, you could have done. Did it get to the point where you had sort of achieved everything? And what made the change come about to switch codes? How much did that weigh on your mind in terms of, obviously, it's a massive leap. A few leagues had done it before you. And you'd obviously dabbled in 96, played a couple of games, a few games for Bath, didn't you? And they had the cross codes game back then. So what led to the final decision to get to switch over? Was it just to try something fresh?
Because you'd been
doing it for so long.
I changed sort of my lifestyle. And, you know, we were talking about Vaiga Tuigamala before. But I'd gone from just going out and getting drunk all the time to all of a sudden, like, living a completely different lifestyle, clean lifestyle, going to church, not drinking, and just having more of a focus on just getting me right, like physically, mentally. And as a result of that, I felt I became a better player. I was more focused on what I was doing. You know, I was performing better, wasn't waking up with a hangover and going to training. And then we just had so many years of you know, more success. And then I suppose it gets to a point with anybody where you look at your career and think, well, where am I at now? And I was 26, and for some reason I was coming out, my contract was up at the end of the year.
You say it's bonkers that you're only 26 at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone would have thought you played, you know, I suppose you did play 10 years, but I was going to say 12, 13 years, but you still did 10.
So at 26, I played 302 games before I switched to rugby union. But it was a case of, like, I knew myself I could still play for Wigan, like, without being Big Edit. I just knew, like, I could be playing this now for the next 8 years quite easily. And then I had a little bit of a taste, like you say, of rugby union at Bath for 4 months. But I thought that was more of a one-off thing, just because the rugby union season changed over from winter to summer. So
just to let everyone know how... I heard a story about that when you play one of the games, and obviously someone's put a kick behind and it's run into the try area, and you've run it back out, and actually all the posh crowd at Bath go, no, no, no. So you ran back in and put it down. It was a 5 minute scrum.
Well, I often say that I didn't know anything about the game. I really didn't know anything about the game. So you're right, you know, ball's been kicked, and my natural reaction is, well, just run it. And I'm just going into the in goal, because you do that and you don't want to get caught in your in goal. Yeah. So I pick it up, I start running out, and the players go like, no, 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 put it down. So then I'm running back into, and it was like, oh, what do you want me to do here? So they just realise, just don't say anything, just let me run. And, you know, quite a lot of the time, I look back now, so raw, and I got caught and I didn't have a clue. But there was a side of it that everybody thought, they tried to overthink. Well, they were just thinking, well, he's going to do this. And so they started turning their backs on it. Well, I caught so many people out because they just thought, oh, he's going to do this. He's going to do no. And I suppose that's why I made such an impact. Because when Clive Woodward, later down the line, rang me up and he started to explain about, this was in 2000. I love rugby league and I love the opportunities and playing for Wigan. But one thing that I hadn't done is really achieved at the international level. I didn't, it wasn't set up right. And I just saw this as an opportunity to just try something new, you know, and there was nothing to say that was going to be successful. Just because, you know, there's other people that have tried and it's not worked. But I just thought it's a great opportunity. And everybody thought, oh, he's coming for the money and that. But I was on less money playing for Sale than I was at Wigan, you know. And I just thought this is an opportunity to, you know, try something new. And
did Clive sell it well? Because obviously, he coming off the back of 99 at that point, he's had to fight for his job. He's had to tell, look, don't judge me on 99, judge me on 2003. He's only been in for 2 years at that point. Did he sell it quite well in terms of what he...
He did. If I'm honest, I wasn't quite sure what more I would be able to learn. Because rugby league, it's always been professional. We've always been full-time, just everything we're doing, days just spent on getting your game right. I always remember going to Bath and then, you know, it'd be a case of guys going out to work and then we'd be training. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't the same professionalism. So I was a little bit sceptical, but I just thought, you know, it's kind of now or never. And it must have sold it well because, you know, I didn't renew my contract with Wigan and I made the switch over and I went to Sale. If you look at the rise into rugby union for me, I made my first game for Sale and it was a real shock because my first game for Sale was against Coventry. 5th of November, we played against Coventry and there was 1,500 people there. And I think 1,200 people came because it was a free pint a pint. And I think probably 1,000 of those were Wigan fans coming to see what was happening. But that first game, one of the guys I was playing against, he dyed his hair pink and I'm thinking, what am I doing here? I got 2 touches of the ball. I managed to score with one of them. So that was November the 5th. The following February, I'm playing for England. Came off the bench 3 times. In fact, no, I played England A in Wrexham.
Bolsh was at fullback.
I think might have been Dan Luger got, so one of the guys got injured. So then I got called up into the first team, was on the bench. So I played 3 games off the bench. And then in June, I'm on a Lions tour. I played in the second game in the Lions tour and I scored 5 tries. And I think people then started to take me a little bit more seriously.
It hadn't even dawned on me where it should do because I know my rugby well enough that, yeah, you went 2001 with barely having played, yeah.
I didn't realise how complex the game was. In rugby league, we used to get stuck into rugby union. It's a game. Shouldn't be, you know, there was no other game other than rugby league when I grew up. And all of a sudden, when I made the switch and I started playing rugby union, I realised, actually, this is a tough game. Physically, it's tough. Mentally, like, just tactically, it's very, very tough. You know, the ball's always alive. People don't realise just, what do I do? Am I up on my feet? Am I off my feet? Am I onside? So the great thing for me was with the England team and that Lions team, like, were the best players. The England team, you know, that ended up winning the World Cup in 2003 reminded me a lot of the Wigan team. Because we had great players. And we had players that didn't need to be told, oh, you need to do a bit more. You know, we're setting the bar. Didn't ask Johnny Wilkinson to do a bit more. Do you know what I mean? It was, we're all pushing each other. Yeah. You know, I came in and I believe at the time, whilst I was raw and I needed a lot, you know, I was saying, well, what do I do in the ruck here? How do I do positional play? Where do I need to be? It was good because I think everybody was learning from each other all the time and pushing each other. And, you know, Johnny Wilkinson, look at his footwork. And so
he always envied you, didn't he? So that's why he did all the extras that he did. He was trying to play catch up.
But it was great because that's how it should be. You know, you can't be good at everything. So where we can learn, the worst thing you can do is be in an environment where you've got so much talent, whether it's bloody sport or business, and not tap into it. You know, it's not just about my game. If it's a team sport, it's like, how can we all get better? How can I help you? How can you help me? And, you know, being around you and the rest of the boys just helped me understand the game. And then going on the Lions tour, I just didn't know who. It was probably a saviour in many ways because I think a lot of players come into an England team or go into a Lions and they're a bit overawed by the whole occasion and names and that. The great thing for me is like, I didn't have a clue. I didn't know who Brian O'Driscoll was or Keith Wood or I hadn't got a clue. I was still trying to learn the names of the England players.
Can we clip they didn't know who Brian O'Driscoll was? I'll send it to him.
No, but I didn't
have a clue. I like edges over Brian.
Didn't have a clue, but then end up rooming with him and sort of going on this journey and, you know, playing at the first test at the Gabba and my mind was blown.
You were an incredible. I still always tell the story of you were doing one arm pull ups and you had like veins going right through your ribs. And I was like, he's like a horse, a Shetland pony, really.
Yeah, that's more
a really in great nick Shetland pony that could sidestep. Did you feel that going into that, that's the best nick you've ever been in? You know, yes, you've done a Lions tour, but you're now going into something, you know, a massive global tournament. It's top five in the world.
I think I've never trained as hard for anything before like that. I mean, we put physically, like, we got absolute beasted. Because remember, in rugby league, if I played, we played international rugby, which would probably only be two or three games a year, you wouldn't spend much time together. All of a sudden, that year, we must have spent about 4 months together.
Yeah.
And it really was physically, we were all in great shape. And we knew we needed to be. You know, one of the things we said is we want to be the fittest team, the best prepared team, and we were. And you could see it, you know, back in the day, probably years before, Jason Leonard, you know, would have been a bit heavier on his feet. But now we got, you know, him and Phil Vickery, you know, doing pirouettes and sidestepping. And do you know what I mean? Because everybody knew we had to get better in some way. So I felt, with all the experience that I had from rugby league and where I was at the edge, because I was 29 then, and I just felt like in really good mental, physical shape to take on, you know, one of the best teams in the world. And, you know, but not only that, just felt really comfortable with the team that I was in, because I knew we had everything we needed to be successful in that tournament. So, yeah, it was a great time. But it was one of those times where, I mean, I remember looking at, thankfully, we won the World Cup, but I don't know what we'd have done, where we'd have gone mentally had that not happened, because we made so many sacrifices. And people are probably thinking, oh, what sacrifices? But we, like, individual, family, you know, physical, like, so many sacrifices, because everybody had the eye on the prize. Everybody wanted the same goal. You know, the kit men, the nutritionists, everybody was there. Like, we need to do everything possible to get to Australia and to bring that trophy back.
Yeah, it is a good job we won it. But then you go on, you end up being captain of England.
Yeah, and that was, I didn't fully understand the magnitude of it. And Johnny Wilkinson was supposed to get the nod as captain, but he got injured. And then Andy Robinson came to me and said, look, you know, I want you to be the captain. And I didn't say yes straight away. I thought, I've got to think about this, because this is a big, big thing. And it was one of the, it was a transitional period for England. It was a tough, tough time. And I said yes. And you know something, I look back now and think, wow, that was a fantastic honour. But I didn't realise everything else around it. I knew, you know, I'd become the first men's black captain for England. But I didn't realise just how many people it affected. I didn't realise the significance of it. It was only sort of after. Because as a player, you know, you win stuff, you get stuff, you just keep looking forward. You don't have time to really dwell. If you get the captaincy, it's right, okay, I've got to deliver now. There's certain things, it's not just about performing on the field. Now I've got to try and galvanise a team. I've got to, you know, do all the stuff that comes with being a captain. And your focus is more about that than any achievement.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a huge responsibility. England lose, I still feel now, if you're the captain, you take it harder than most of the players, because you're the one that's doing the press conferences. You're the one that has somehow...
Do you
know what I mean? I think you get judged more as a captain. But, you know, what an opportunity, especially when I think about where it all started. Didn't know anything about rugby union. I'm here at the Hunslet Club. And I, little me, went from living in one of the most deprived areas to not just going through one sport, to go into another sport, which was not just a different sport, different class. You know, it was a massive culture shock for me. And then end up being, you know, England captain.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the biggest sort of thing is, I think there have always been black people playing rugby, but the schooling and everything is, like, rugby union is always posh school sort of based, whereas you sort of set the trend on not coming in the usual way. That's, like, you know, and is what rugby hasn't been, rugby union hasn't been good at for a long time, is going somewhere else to find your talent.
Yeah.
It's normally the schools that provide the talent, and I think that was the, I think that's one of the biggest impacts that you made.
And that, and that's why, you know, one of the things I do now, especially around these areas, is come back in.
Yeah.
And most kids around here won't have a clue what rugby union is. But surely, if we're looking to grow the game in rugby union, you know, at grassroots level, you know, and provide the best players at, in the top tier, surely you have to come. And if I've done that from this area, how many more kids could there be given an opportunity to go and do something? Do you know what I mean? Or at least like build a pool, build a, the grassroots pool to give us more. So for me, it's a must because there's a lot of talent around here. They just need nurturing. And there will be a lot of kids in here that, you know, don't know whether to run out the in-goal.
Hunslet Club to HQ.
Listen, it's amazing what talent there is in areas. And it just, you know, sometimes we just need a pat on the back and just say, you know, you're quite good at that. And it's amazing where you can get to.
Well, Jace, thanks. I think it's amazing what you're doing at grassroots level. You know, having kids myself, I try and force down Mitch and Hampton Rugby Club all the time as well. Forced out.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting until Lucas is old enough. They've got to go. That was the deal I made with them. They've got to play rugby until Lucas is old enough to go down.
Right.
So at least he spends Sundays down there as well. But thank you for your time. I think it's amazing and always a pleasure to see you.
Good to see you. Rocket. Right. Yes.